Welcome to the weekend and this edition of the Florida Roundtable. Early this week, Florida was struck by our first hurricane of the season. Hurricane Debbie made landfall Monday morning in the Big Bend region. I'm Bill Mick. You can catch up with me in our Florida Roundtable podcasts at BillMick.com. And this week, we're talking with Will Ulrich, Warning Coordination Meteorologist with the National Weather Service. We'll take a look at the season ahead, the methods of determining just how severe the season will be, and specific storms and how strong they are likely to be. Hurricane season in focus this weekend on the Florida Roundtable. Will Ulrich will join us as we continue looking at hurricane season. We've already seen an impact. We are bound to see more. How severe they are? Well, we'll take a look at that this weekend on the Florida News Network. Glad you're with us on the Roundtable.
Did you and your family lose Florida Medicaid and need health coverage? Check this out. You may be eligible to enroll in a low-cost health plan at healthcare.gov. With the new law, 4 out of 5 customers can find a plan for $10 or less per month with financial help. Healthcare.gov offers quality plans that cover doctor visits, prescriptions, emergency care, and more. Healthcare.gov is here for you. Enroll today for coverage starting the first of next month. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Get the facts and take action before a bad contractor takes advantage of you. Hurricane and storm recovery can be emotionally and financially challenging without having to worry about being scammed by contractors. Find out how to protect yourself from fraud and scams by reviewing AARP Florida's important disaster recovery advice. From vetting contractors to understanding assignment of benefits, we've got you covered. Visit aarp.org/fldisasterhelp.
Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. Call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels.
802-341-4542. 802-341-4542. That's 802-341-4542.
Attention Florida drivers. October is National Pedestrian Safety Month, and we want to remind you that staying safe is a shared responsibility between you and pedestrians. Last year in Florida, there were over 10,000 pedestrian-related crashes. As a driver, be extra cautious and look out for pedestrians at all times. Slow down and yield to pedestrians in crosswalks. Failure to yield can result in a fine and 3 points on your license. Remember, safety starts with you. This message is brought to you by the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundtable. Bill Mick with Will Ulrich from the National Weather Service, a warning coordination meteorologist. Does that mean you get to tell us this is the warning and this is when and why?
I get to tell that to all of our partners in East Central Florida. So yeah, kind of. You're right, Bill.
I like it. I like where you're coming from. It busy time of year for you. We just came out of Hurricane Debbie, impacting us around the Big Bend area, close to where Idalia was at the end of last season. Let's talk about this latest storm, or this first one, really, that's hit us in Florida this year.
Yeah, you know, Debbie's a reminder that here we are in early August, and we're entering the peak of hurricane season. The busiest time for the Atlantic hurricane season runs from about August 1 through the middle to latter portions of October. So Debbie came right on time and unfortunately went into an area that is still cleaning up from Idalia last year and really kind of wreaked havoc on the folks up there who are not used to seeing hurricanes making landfall. Statistically speaking, that portion of Florida doesn't often see landfalling hurricanes. So twice, back to back, year to year, they've had to deal with.
That's getting hit twice. That's not good.
Yeah, it's not good. And relics back to the 2004 hurricane season for us locally. You know, Bill, I know you're based here in Melbourne, right? And we had to deal with 3 storms, Charlie, Frances, and Jean. Realize it or not, it's the 20th anniversary.
It is.
So every season's different. And unfortunately, you know, those folks have already had to deal with one. And we, you know, unfortunately have a busy hurricane season, that which I know we're going to talk about later in the show.
As far as Debbie went, how did it match the expectations? As we saw this storm develop and move into the Gulf and then move toward Florida, did it meet the expectations that you guys had as you predicted this storm?
Sure. I think there was a lot of noise out there on, you know, different social media platforms that were really hyping up Debbie, because I saw a lot of possibilities with regards to rapid intensification. Yet Remember, the meteorologists at the National Hurricane Center are trained to look at this information, and all along they had the system coming in as a Category 1 hurricane somewhere along the west coast of Florida and Big Bend. And sure enough, that's exactly what Debbie did. So if you can ignore the noise and just focus on the forecast, I understand there's a lot of uncertainty with landfalling hurricanes. You can kind of make the best preparations for you and your family if you try and avoid that noise like we saw early in the season. We're just, you know, this is the second week in August, right? We've got a long way to go. So it's really important to get that information from reliable sources. And all in all, Debbie, you know, performed as expected, a Category 1 hurricane landfall near Steinhatchee, significant storm surge concerns along the northwest Florida coast, and because of its slow forward motion, a lot of flooding rain.
And as it went through Florida into Georgia and South Carolina, even more rain and maybe more devastation up there than what we saw.
It reminds me of Faye in 2008. For those of you in East Central Florida, probably remember Faye. I often heard, oh, it's just a tropical storm. Well, remember, tropical storm flooding potential is tied to its forward motion and has nothing to do with its intensity. So Debbie is another example of one of those storms that was slow moving and brought significant flooding potentials. It's going to be remembered as a water storm for its storm surge along the coast, as well as its flooding rainfall potential, than a windstorm, because while it did make landfall as a Category 1 hurricane, the impacts overall were less compared to what we saw from the rain and flooding concerns.
Speaking of comparisons, let's look at Idalia at the end of last season and Debbie now. I realize we're in the early days after Debbie. We still have some calculation to do. Compare those two storms. How did this one do damage-wise?
Idalia was a larger storm and had more time to intensify over the Gulf of Mexico. It took a while for Debbie to get its act together. So its size and intensity, I'm speaking of Debbie here, Debbie's size and intensity was less than that of Idalia. In fact, Idalia made landfall as a Category 2, Category 3 hurricane in the Big Bend region. So more wind potential, larger wind fields, had more opportunity to push water further inland, in other words, storm surge. This storm was really starting to get its act together as it moved up towards the Big Bend region. And so it didn't have that time to really ramp up and lead to significant impacts. But nonetheless, significant storm surge, significant flooding rainfall potential in some areas, particularly close to the coast. And that's a big concern.
And we look ahead to the rest of this hurricane season in front of us with Will Ulrich when we come back on the Roundtable.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it.
800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. That's 800-398-0651.
In the aftermath of the storm, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission wants to remind boaters to pay extra attention while on the water. Water conditions can be hazardous because of debris or displaced vessels. In addition, new shoals or sandbars may have formed, and navigation markers may be missing or damaged. Some areas may still be experiencing high water and flooding and may not be accessible. You can report any damage to navigation markers to the FWC at 866-405-2869 or visit myfwc.com for more information.
Hello, I'm Hector Elizondo, Emmy Award-winning actor, and I want to talk to you about getting older. My body hurts, my joints ache, and sometimes I forget.
I forget that doing all your own scenes for a movie isn't always the best decision. Especially when you're galloping side saddle down a countryside road on a horse named Archibello, who seems to have only one speed, high. And pulling on his reins only seems to encourage him to go even faster. So, of course, my body hurts and my joints ache, but it's not because of my age. It's because I'm living my life. Oh, Archibello!
Don't let life pass you by. Take care of your brain health. It may just help you stay on top of your game.
As soon as this scene wraps, I'm going to kiss the ground, thank Archibello for his outstanding performance, feed him a carrot, and visit brainhealth.gov.
Find out how you can make the most of your brain as you age at brainhealth.gov.
Back on the Florida Roundtable with Will Ulrich from the National Weather Service, the warning coordination meteorologist here in East Central Florida. And we're talking hurricane season that has still got much in front of us. Will, as you mentioned, it was just the start of this season. And forecasters seem to have a good handle on Debbie. What goes into having that good read? I know it's a lot of work on your part, and it's you got multiple storms at any given time that you're tracking from their inception to when they get wherever they're going.
Yeah, sure. National Hurricane Center, who is the official source of forecast and warning information for tropical cyclones, National Hurricane Center, of course, being part of the National Weather Service, down in Miami, Florida, they have a team of meteorologists that work 24/7 like we do at the Melbourne Forecast Office, and they are taking in all sorts of remote sensing and what we call observational or in-situ data. That combination of remote sensing, what do I mean by remote sensing? Satellite and radar technology, basically being able to look at it from sensors and interrogating the inside of a storm so that they can understand its structure. And then that information gets fed into a myriad of individual computer models. You might have heard of several of those computer models, the GFS, the European, the UK Met, all examples of computer models, meteorological computer models that are run around the world. The best thing that I can tell you is that no one computer model performs the best. It's best to take what we call kind of a blending approach, and that's what allows them to perform fairly well, but there's still plenty of uncertainty.
So it's an aggregate, an averaging, that type of thing?
We call it ensemble. So we start with this storm, let's say Debbie, for instance, in the southeastern Gulf of Mexico, and we think about the what ifs. What if it was a little bit stronger than what the computer model says? What if it's a little bit weaker? What if the winds are more lopsided on one direction? And then we run the computer models multiple times, sometimes as many as 30 times, as many as 50 times, and we look at the aggregate, as you said, Bill, to see, can we determine any trends? Does it look like the highest confidence is going to take it into this part of the Gulf of Mexico or this part of the state? So no one computer model is best during a hurricane season. It's this concept of kind of threading many computer models to get the best possible forecast.
All right, very good. And again, you could have multiple storms at any given time.
So they basically assign forecasters to storms. And so the more storms that are out there, the more manpower or hours that are needed from the folks down at the National Hurricane Center. In the Atlantic, at any given time, we can have upwards of 3 to 4 storms during the peak of the hurricane season. And there's plenty of precedent for that. And so we staff up and staff down as needed.
So tell me, you're sitting in your office, you see these storms out there, and you look at what's causing them to develop or what you see initially. Are you sitting there saying, I hope I get that one, I hope I get that one?
I don't know about that, only because, you know, we're people too, and we have livelihoods. We know the impacts of hurricanes, right? And so it's one of those things where there are certain storms that you just know are going to better behave than others. And then there are others that just give you that look that makes your stomach sink. And so we've all worked some seminal kind of events. Myself, I had to issue warnings during the landfall of Hurricane Michael along the Panhandle, and I had to issue several extreme wind warnings on behalf of the National Weather Service office in Tallahassee. And you knew what that storm was doing to the livelihoods of the people in the Panhandle.
Absolutely.
And that makes you appreciate your job even more, but at the same time, gives you that feeling like, wow, Mother Nature's hard to tame.
How do you guys evaluate the job that you do? Is there a track record? Do you watch these storms and go back and take a look? Where did we get it right? Where did we get it wrong? How do we get it better?
That's not just for hurricanes. That's year-round. So any type of warnings, whether it's tornado warnings, severe thunderstorm warnings, hurricane warnings, we have to go back, and we actually have to write up reports that end up going all the way up to headquarters in Congress to show that our forecasts are reliable and accurate. And so as it relates to hurricane season, a team of meteorologists down at the National Hurricane Center will go back after the season is over and completely reevaluate all of the products and services that were issued. They'll even go back and reanalyze the data that came in to forecasting that hurricane. And so how did the models perform? How did the interrogation of satellite and radar data help their ability to issue those forecasts? And so there is a lot of looking back. Once you get to November 30th, which is the end of the Atlantic hurricane season, so they will assign meteorologists during the downtime for tropical season anyway, right, from November through about May 31st, they will assign hurricane forecasters to individual storms and evaluate their evolution and how the National Hurricane Center performed.
You mentioned something that triggered a memory. About a year ago, they were talking about moving the start of hurricane season back a month or so. What's going to drive that decision, or has it already been made?
Yeah, the decision has been put off indefinitely. As of right now, to put in perspective, from June 1st through November 30th, 97% of tropical storms and hurricanes that have occurred, you know, year-round in the Atlantic Basin, Gulf of Mexico, and Caribbean occur within that six-month window, which again starts on June 1st and runs through November 30th. So only a small percentage of storms start within that May 15th through June 1st timeframe, and they determined that it just wasn't enough to go ahead and expand the start of the Atlantic hurricane season. Now, the Pacific gets a little bit earlier start. The Eastern Pacific to the, you know, south of Mexico and to the west of Central America, their hurricane season actually does start on May 15th. But we haven't seen enough storms in the Atlantic in, you know, that May timeframe to really justify starting the Atlantic hurricane season any earlier.
All right. Speaking of such things, got a story midweek from the News Service of Florida that references the folks at Colorado State University who have their Department of Atmospheric Science that issues their predictions for the season. Number one, I want the blizzard prediction season located in Miami from now on. But what are these folks doing? Are they affiliated with you guys, or are they an independent group that does this thing?
Yeah, so academia all across the country issue their own forecasts as it relates to hurricane season and severe weather season. And the most well-known group of tropical forecasters comes out of Colorado State University. They have been issuing tropical forecasts going back all the way to 1983 under the purview of Dr. William Gray. Dr. William Gray was an avid meteorologist who took a love for tropical meteorology, and it just so happened that he studied at Colorado State University. So you think to yourself, wait a minute, Colorado, what does that have to do with tropical cyclones? But the fact is, he helped build from the ground up that tropical atmospheric department in meteorology, and from the ground up brought with him a team of meteorologists that really studied different parts of the atmosphere and ocean in the Atlantic to determine, you know, the forecast for tropical cyclone season. And so they've been issuing forecasts going all the way back to 1983. Now, Dr. William Gray has passed since then, and so now it's under Dr. Philip Klotzbach. But nonetheless, they continue to issue those forecasts. And like you said, Bill, they're expecting a very busy season. That information does get into the hands of the forecasters at the Climate Prediction Center and the National Hurricane Center and the National Weather Service. And so we work closely with our academic partners. But at the end of the day, the National Weather Service also issues their own forecast.
Now, they have just this week dialed back their prediction, but just by a couple of storms. They predicted 25 initially. Now they've rolled it back to 23. Not that that's much comfort for anybody who faces a hurricane.
Of course not, because here's the thing. They actually went back to what their original forecast was. So Colorado State University does their first forecast in April, and Dr. Philip Klotzbach and his team initially said, we're going to have 23 named storms this hurricane season, with some of them becoming hurricanes and major hurricanes. Well, at one point in a June update, they upped that number to 25, but now with their most recent update, they're back down to 23.
Data drives it backwards?
I think just looking at early season trends, it's one of those things where by now in June and July and early August, we would have thought that we would have had a few more storms. And so that, since that hasn't panned out, they've went ahead and, you know, just brought that number back down to 23. But I caution people thinking to themselves, 23, that, wait a minute, versus 25, that's great. A normal hurricane season, if there is such a thing as normal, only calls for about 14 named storms in the Atlantic Basin.
It's
already different. Well above normal.
Yeah.
Already well above normal. So is there going to be a discernible difference between 23 and 25 for us here in the state of Florida? No. The fact is it's going to be a unusually busy season in the Atlantic Basin. Now, you can have all the storms in the world, but if they somehow miraculously avoid Florida, we're all going to say to ourselves, whew, that was a pretty quiet season. When in reality, what matters is, are those storms going to impact Florida? That's a little harder to determine, especially earlier in the season.
Well, speaking of, what are the current projections from your perspective as to what Florida is going to face this season?
And so there's the challenge in the hurricane problem, determining exactly where those storms are going to go. I can tell you that there is very little skill in being able to tell you where hurricanes are going to go more than 5 to 7 days from now. You may hear some folks out there on social media who attempt to tell you pattern recognition that, oh, the storm is going to go here in this month and the storm's going to go here in this month. The fact is, you know, meteorology is still an inexact science, and we haven't fully been able to grasp the exact patterns that go into where tropical cyclones end up. But we can read these early season signs and realize that this season is going to be above normal. And the fact is, Florida sticks out like a sore thumb with its 900 to 950 miles of coastline. Is Florida bound to be impacted by more than just Debbie this hurricane season? Yes, probably. Here we are already 3 months into the hurricane season, and we've had one system impact us, and we're just getting started with the busiest part of the season. So is another impact likely, whether it's indirect or direct? Yes, when we're talking about 23 named storms from Colorado State University, National Hurricane Center put out a forecast for 17 to 25, 23 named storms. That is highly unusual. And so if you have more storms out there in the basin, Florida, unfortunately, is more likely to see one of those storms.
Well, you mentioned 2004 earlier when we had those back-to-back-to-back storms. Are we looking at a similar season? Is it shaping up like 2004 did, if you look at the historic record?
Every season is different, so there's absolutely
nothing to read from it then.
No, there's no way that I can sit here and tell you that this season's going to be like 2004, because back in 2004, if you had asked, oh, what comparative season is this going to be like, no one would have ever told you that we would have ended up having four named systems, right? It wasn't just Charlie, Francis, and Jean, which are near and dear to our hearts here in Melbourne, which is where
Ivan was out there too.
There was Ivan in the panhandle, right? Yeah. So there were four. There was actually a fifth tropical storm that impacted Florida. So 2004 was a highly unusual season. And to say this year is going to be like that, it's too early. We simply cannot do that. But we're watching it, we're monitoring it, and we just want to ensure everyone in the state of Florida is keeping an eye out too, because when you have this many storms, the fact is it is true that Florida is more likely to see one of those tropical systems.
And we continue with Will Ulrich from the National Weather Service as the Florida Roundtable continues in moments here on the Florida News Network.
Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. Call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels.
802-341-4542. 802-341-4542. That's 802-341-4542.
Get the facts and take action before a bad contractor takes advantage of you. Hurricane and storm recovery can be emotionally and financially challenging without having to worry about being scammed by contractors. Find out how to protect yourself from fraud and scams by reviewing AARP Florida's important disaster recovery advice. From vetting contractors to understanding assignment of benefits, we've got you covered. Visit aarp.org/fldisasterhelp.
Hi, I'm Johnny Erickson Tata. Growing up with a brother with autism, Sarah Cronk witnessed firsthand how kids with disabilities felt left out by their peers. It's why at the age of 15, Sarah approached her cheerleading coach with an idea to include girls with disabilities on her school's cheer team. Well, what started out as an inclusive high school cheer team in a small town in Iowa has led to what is now known as Sparkle Effect, a thriving nonprofit with over 180 cheer teams across the United States, bringing students with and without disabilities together through cheerleading. The result? More confidence, higher grades, and better school attendance for kids with disabilities. And for those without a disability, new friends and a greater empathy. You want to learn more? Well, visit disabilitycampaign.org, where we have posted a link to the fabulous work known as The Sparkle Effect.
We're here early before they wake up. We stay late. We stay informed. We invest in the latest technology.
We take the time to train the next generation of doctors and nurses. We work together to make sure we heal their bodies and their minds.
We do this not because it's our job, but because this is about our veterans' lives. This is our mission. More than 300,000 of us working as one, together with families and loved ones. No matter where they live in this country, we'll be there.
We all come together and stand together to serve our veterans. We stand strong, united. Stand with us in caring for our veterans.
Imagine. Imagine being denied an apartment because of your religion, or your race, or because you have children, or a disability.
It's so wrong.
Yes, but who has the power to stop this?
You do. Each of us has the power. The law is on your side. It's illegal for landlords to discriminate because of race, color, religion, sex, national origin, disability, or familial status. If you suspect that you have experienced housing discrimination, file a complaint with HUD immediately so we can investigate it. Fair housing is your right.
Use it.
To learn more, visit hud.gov/fairhousing. That's hud.gov/fairhousing. Or call 1-800-669-9777. 1-800-669-9777. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Bill Mick back with you on the Florida Roundtable with Will Ulrich, the warning coordination meteorologist from the National Weather Service here in East Central Florida. Will, it's good to have you back in here and appreciate the information you bring to the table in this hurricane season. You mentioned early in the show that that Big Bend area is not an area that is typically vulnerable to an impact of a storm or landfall of a storm. Not that you don't get the impact if it's not falling on you. We know how these big storms get, the rain and other devastation they bring. Are there areas here in Florida that are more vulnerable than others that really have to watch out?
Yeah, so what we can do is we can look back with, you know, the record of storms that we have going all the way back to 1850. And you think to yourself, wait a minute, what type of reliable records do we have going back then? Well, the fact is we have ship track records as well as some written records from, you know, folks who settled here in Florida. And we are able to get an idea of whether or not storms impacted Florida all the way back to the mid-1800s. And so we can calculate the return frequency of storms, not just tropical storms, but Category 1 hurricanes, Category 2, 3, 4, and 5. And
you're able to determine that based on the damage been reported.
Now, you know, all things considered, yeah. How much can we do with a 170-year record? More than you'd realize. And as we continue to add additional years to that record, we'll be able to, you know, have a more reliable database to pull from. So these return frequencies, for instance, of, let's say, hurricanes, it is obvious that South Florida stands the greatest chance to see a tropical system. Why? It is situated further down in the Gulf of Mexico and the Atlantic, where the water temperatures are warmer and where there are just more tropical cyclones. So Florida, sticking out like a sore thumb, is more likely to be impacted across the southern portion of the state. When we look at the return frequencies of hurricanes across South Florida, it's generally anywhere from a hurricane makes landfall or impacts that area within once every 4 to 7 years. If we move up the coast to, say, Tampa and Melbourne, that return frequency drops quite a bit. Now, it is more likely that you're going to have more storms in the Gulf of Mexico. So the return frequency for Tampa is on the order for a hurricane once every maybe 10 to 15 years. For Melbourne, it's about once every 20 years. Statistically speaking, the areas that are least likely to see hurricanes are the northeast Florida coast up near Jacksonville and Palm Coast, and then along the Florida Big Bend region. And then it starts to climb again as you move west into the panhandle and closer to Alabama and Mississippi. In other words, you're more likely to have storms. One of the reasons why we don't see as many storms in northeast Florida is because of the shape of the coastline. By the time storms get to about the latitude of Cape Canaveral, they're moving in a northwest direction, so they're moving up towards the southeastern United States. It's more difficult to get a landfalling hurricane in Brevard counties northward on the east coast, and so that reduces that return frequency. In other words, we get less storms. And so we have a good reliable record of storms and their impacts in the state of Florida, and return frequencies allow us to kind of identify those areas that are threatened more than other. But without a doubt, South Florida is impacted more.
It seems like the little town of Punta Gorda is frequently mentioned with storms on the West Coast. I happen to know because back in 04, we lost a radio station there. We talked to their general manager as we were doing storm coverage here. And I've heard their name repeatedly in the last few seasons.
Punta Gorda, I think, was put on the map on account of Hurricane Charley. Because sure enough, Hurricane Charley went right over Punta Gorda and devastated that community in terms of its wind speeds. Remember, Charley was remembered for its winds. It was such a small, compact storm that it didn't have a lot of storm surge with it. But fast forward 18 years... to 2022, when Hurricane Ian made landfall in a very similar area, completely different storm, much larger in size, also very slow moving. So the amount of water that was pushed on shore in southwest Florida was just, much higher than anything that we had seen, in years past. And that included, Hurricane Charley. So that area of southwest Florida really has taken it on the chin lately. And we can look back to Irma to 2017, Charley 2004, and Ian in 2022. So I'm not surprised that Punta Gorda is kind of in everyone's minds.
Etched in our minds just a little bit. Yeah, sorry about your luck, Punta Gorda. It happens. You were mentioning category storms earlier. You've got, of course, tropical storms before you get hurricane force. You've got 1 through 5 in hurricanes. And you also said, don't focus on the intensity of the storm. Is the wind a lesser factor than the rain, or am I reading that wrong?
The answer's complicated. Here's the thing, right?
That's why we brought you in, Will.
Tropical cyclones, which is the overarching definition, includes in the Atlantic Basin tropical depressions, tropical storms, and hurricanes. And they are based off of their 1 minute average wind speed. In other words, if we look at a storm and we measure the wind speed for 60 seconds, that is the 1 minute average wind speed. So when National Hurricane Center tells you that sustained wind speeds are 50 miles per hour, that means for 60 seconds they were blowing at least 50 miles per hour. That's what the sustained wind speeds. And that's how we measure tropical cyclones, which include, again, depression, storms, and hurricanes. Tropical depressions, tropical storms, and hurricanes all bring 4 primary hazards. And wind is just one of them. Wind, storm surge, flooding rainfall, and tornadoes. And we have to get past just looking at a storm for its category, because the fact is every storm is different. Storms come in all shapes and sizes, and you may have situations where the flooding rainfall threat is greater than the wind threat, and in some scenarios where the flooding rainfall and the tornado risk may pose a higher threat than the overall wind. We are building resilient communities here in the state of Florida with those new building codes, especially since the early 1990s, so wind is becoming less of a factor. That's not to say it's still not a dangerous and significant contributor to the damage and deaths that we see here in the state, but it is becoming less of a factor. We have to focus on the threat that has the greatest potential for the loss of life, and that is storm surge, which is effectively putting the ocean or rivers where they shouldn't be. That, by far and away, is the number one, has the number one potential for the loss of property and damage. So let's get away from just worrying about what the category of a storm is. Granted, that has ramifications for the amount of wind that a community may experience, and focus more on a holistic approach of looking at all 4 hazards.
Well, and with the wind, as you mentioned, the building codes are stronger, that you're not going to have as much devastation to some structures as you might have had. But the debris that is picked up, how important is it to secure the things around your home, around your business? And what can't you secure that might be out there?
Wind is why we see debris is the reason why we see wind-related fatalities in storms. It is because you're picking up debris that then becomes a projectile that can potentially hurt or kill someone. Blunt force trauma makes up about 90 to 95% of wind-related fatalities. In other words, debris being thrown in the wind, hitting someone or someone inside of their home, a tree falling on the roof, and then that roof caving in on anyone who resides in
that home. We saw that with Debbie, sadly.
Yes, unfortunately. So that is what we're talking about in terms of risk to individuals. And sometimes, you know, while the structure itself may be protected against wind, the trees or other debris may damage a home, and then that could potentially pose a risk to individuals inside of that home. So it's complicated. So while we are reducing our overall vulnerability as a whole in the state, there are still a ton of communities within the state that are extremely vulnerable to wind. So it's important to pay attention to that one of four factors of hurricanes, but there are other things that we need to be focusing on as well.
Let's talk about storm surge just a little bit, and how good are the predictions generally when you're having a storm come on as to what the surge is going to be? What are the conditions that impact that?
Sure. Storm surge, they have an entire team of meteorologists down at the National Hurricane Center that are designed to look at and analyze storm surge modeling data, and they can give emergency managers information as it relates to the amount of water that may be in areas that are normally dry. That's effectively what we're talking about, right, with storm surge, putting the ocean or the river in areas where it doesn't belong. And when you talk about waves, wave action on top of that water, that really brings with it a huge potential for loss of life and property. And so we've got modeling that can give us an idea based on the storm's forward motion, the storm's strength, and the tides as to how high that water may get in communities. But unfortunately, remember, being able to tell you exactly where a hurricane is going to go is difficult, and there's a lot of uncertainty around it. And so we have to sometimes be very broad and general in our storm surge assessment. Sometimes you'll hear us say, there is the potential for life-threatening storm surge inundation from this point to this point, and everywhere in between you may see maximum values of 6 to 9 feet. Well, that's really going to determine what really is going to get determined in that is how much, in other words, how much, you know, elevation there is, how much development there is. And that's very difficult for National Hurricane Center meteorologists in Miami to know. So we sometimes have to be broad. And at the end of the day, that will give emergency managers information to make those evacuation decisions. So it's complicated. It's getting better as we understand our communities here in the state of Florida, but we're getting there. But understand there's plenty of uncertainty.
Flooding, rains, and tornadoes still a threat to talk about. We're going to talk about that, and we'll take a look as a storm passes through. What is it that you need to do to be prepared? We'll talk evacuations and other preparation tips before the hour's done here on the Florida Roundtable with Will Ulrich from the National Weather Service.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it.
800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. That's 800-398-0651.
Wearing a life jacket or personal flotation device is one of the most important decisions you can make while boating. Today, there are several types of life jackets available, so you can find one that's comfortable and convenient to wear no matter what you're doing. And thanks to incredible advances in inflatable technology and innovative materials development, safety and comfort can both be a priority. Stay safe, stay comfortable, wear it Florida. For more information on this and other safe boating topics, visit myfwc.com.
If you need health coverage due to a life change, healthcare.gov is here for you. Like it was there for Terrence and Jody when they got married.
And Sophia, when she had a baby. And Gary, when he moved and needed new insurance. There are many other ways to qualify. Visit healthcare.gov today to see if you're eligible to enroll. Limited time to enroll. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Floridians, do you know how close you are to freshness? It's not a plane or a ship ride away. It's not across an ocean or over the equator. It's not even a far drive. The peak of freshness is at your grocery store, and it's called Fresh from Florida. Fresh from Florida is local produce grown by farmers right here in our own state, meaning it's always fresh, always in season, and always mouthwateringly good. Look for the sunny Fresh from Florida logo or ask for it by name where you shop.
Back on the Florida Roundtable as we discuss hurricane season with National Weather Service meteorologist Will Ulrich. Will, we've gotten through a couple of the hazards that we're talking about in hurricane season. Flooding rain being the next one we want to tackle. We did see fatalities during Debby because of folks driving through areas in flooding rain, having vehicular incidents because of it. Let's talk about that aspect for a minute.
So everybody thinks that, you know, the stronger a storm, the greater the flooding potential there is with that storm. But unfortunately, that really has nothing to do with it. The category of a storm is not tied to the flooding, to its flooding potential. It is the forward motion of the storm. In other words, the slower the moving storm, the more potential there is for flooding in communities, particularly our more vulnerable communities or those communities along rivers. So when we look at flooding rainfall potential, we analyze the amount of tropical moisture that's going to be drawn into that system, which naturally there's going to be a lot of moisture within these systems.
Sure.
And then we identify potential storm motion with that system. So the slower the moving storm, the more rain that is going to be dropped out of that system, and the greater the overall flooding risk.
Tornadoes seems to be a major risk when we have a storm impacting us here. And we've been fortunate. My time in Florida, I got here in 98. We've been brushed. We've never taken a direct hit here in the central East Coast. But even being brushed by a storm, you can get some severe things. Tornadoes seem to be a common occurrence with that.
Tornadoes are very common in the outer rain bands of tropical systems. So as people are wrapping up their preparations for a storm, sometimes the outer rain bands can catch people off guard. So it's important to recognize the risk of tornadoes, particularly in the eastern quadrant or the eastern semicircle of a storm. In other words, relative to a storm's forward motion, if you're in that northeastern or eastern quadrant of the storm, that's where the wind shear, which is tied to the potential development of tornadoes, is highest. So tornadoes, which are really hyper-local events, right? Tornadoes can affect one street in a community, and then the very next street over, everything's fine. They're what we consider kind of hyper-local events. They can occur 200, 300, sometimes as many as 400 miles from the center of a tropical system. So before conditions even really start to deteriorate, these outer rain bands can pose risks themselves. So it's really important that people have a plan if a tornado warning is issued in advance or during a tropical system. In other words, it's time to shelter, but maybe if you're sheltered from the storm, it's time to get into the interior room or a closet of your home. In other words, shelter within a shelter.
Very, very good. There are other hazards that present themselves in the wake of a storm. Displaced wildlife, power lines down, traffic not functioning well because of power being out, traffic lights are gone. A lot of things to consider in the aftermath.
This doesn't get talked enough about. The lead up to a storm and the effects after a storm, the recovery phase. We are actually seeing more fatalities, what we call indirect fatalities, than direct fatalities in a lot of the storms that are impacting the United States. In other words, direct fatalities are those storms associated with the storm's forces, the wind, the rain, the storm surge. That's what's killing people during the storm. But what about the lead up or the effects after a tropical cyclone? Believe it or not, in some systems, think back to Ian, for instance, we saw nearly double the amount of fatalities from indirect causes than direct causes. During the evacuation phase, people getting into accidents. Mm-hmm. During the recovery phase, people not knowing whether certain electrical lines, power lines are active or not, or going into homes that they don't know whether the power is active or not, not having enough medical care for the days after a storm. In other words, not seeking those special needs protection. Those are all things that aren't being factored, I think, enough into the conversation. And so don't just think about what would you do during the storm itself. Think about what would you do after the storm, and how could you and your family be safe in the lead up and days after a storm. That's the conversation we need to have more.
Florida's population is growing. We've got people living here now who've never been through a hurricane season in Florida, may not know what it's like to experience it. Evacuation orders. Does the National Weather Service have direct input on that, or is it just the information to local authorities and they make the call?
At the end of the day, the National Weather Service is providing what we call decision support services. In other words, we're giving them environmental information that allows them to make evacuation decisions. Evacuation zones are built off of storm surge guidance. We want to get people out of the way of storm surge. So evacuation zones, particularly along the coasts and the lagoons along our coastline, are dictated based off of modeling that we use to identify which areas are at risk of storm surge. There are other vulnerable communities out there, right? Those maybe in RV homes or mobile and manufactured homes that may also be vulnerable. So they may call for separate evacuation orders. But at the end of the day, the information that we provide allows local governments and authorities to make those decisions to get people to do the right thing at the right time and get them out of harm's way.
The thing that worries me as I sit in this studio and we talk our community through storms when they occur is the complacency we've seemed to develop because our area hasn't been hit hard. We talk about that, what to do, how to be prepared when the storm comes your way, as we continue on the roundtable here on the Florida News Network.
There's a lot on the line this election. From protecting Social Security that you've earned to supporting family caregivers, and you have the power to make the candidates listen. Because older voters decide elections. That's why AARP Florida has created a guide with the most up-to-date information about when, where, and how to vote. Make sure that the candidates hear from you. Get trusted information at aarp.org/FLVotes. That's aarp.org/FLVotes.
Great deals are now Blue Munich Quality Green Specialists. Featuring a wide variety of fancy trees, ornamentals, herbs, and flowers, including over 50 varieties of fruiting plants, with sustainable organic nursery products and top quality soil testing. Experience a world of beauty at Quality Green. Open 9 to 4 daily at 335 West Michigan Avenue in DeLand. Online at qualitygreenspecialist.com. Quality Green Specialists. Top quality plants, sustainable gardening products, friendly expert advice.
Attention all pedestrians. October is National Pedestrian Safety Month, and we want to remind you that staying safe is a shared responsibility between you and drivers. Last year in Florida, there were over 10,000 pedestrian-related crashes. Don't become a statistic. Walk on sidewalks, stay alert, and avoid distractions like headphones and cell phones. Cross streets at crosswalks, and never enter the street from between parked cars. Remember, safety starts with you. This message is brought to you by the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles.
Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. Call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels.
802-341-4542. 802-341-4542. That's 802-341-4542.
Shortness of breath, patient's confused. Temp 102.
He just had an infection. What's going on?
He's becoming septic.
Antibiotics started. Bed ready. Let's move him.
Infections can lead to a deadly chain reaction in your body called sepsis. Very quickly, sepsis can cause tissue damage, organ failure, and even death. If you know the risks, can spot the symptoms, and act fast, then you can get ahead of sepsis. Learn more at cdc.gov/sepsis.
My muscles ached. I was tired all the time.
My son had a full-blown asthma attack. It came out of nowhere.
The unsettling thing about some symptoms is
I had a fever and these terrible headaches.
You don't always know what's causing them.
It was Lyme disease from a tick bite.
I had Zika virus from a mosquito.
He had a reaction to cockroach allergens.
Threats to your health can come from unexpected places. Get the facts. Visit pestworld.org.
a public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
Wrapping up our discussion on hurricanes here on the Florida Roundtable, Will Ulrich is the weather warning coordination meteorologist with the National Weather Service. And we mentioned, Will, that we've got a lot of new residents to the state of Florida, maybe have never been through a hurricane season. I've had people stop me at the gas station saying, I'm hearing this evacuation warning. Should I go? Should I go? Well, ma'am, I got to stay because of what I do for a living. But yes, you should go. I wouldn't want to tell somebody not to take that precaution. Yeah. What do people need to do to be ready for this storm season and to respond appropriately?
We've got a busy season ahead of us, right? All signs point to what will likely be one of the busier seasons on record for the Atlantic Basin. And this year appears to, you know, bring with it some threats here to the state of Florida. So the first thing that people can do is to consider all four of the threats that I just mentioned to you. Is my home and is my family threatened by storm surge? In other words, if you're in an evacuation zone, there's a reason you're in an evacuation zone, because mm-hmm. it probably has something to do with storm surge. So identify whether you are in an evacuation zone. You can do that by going to Florida Department of Emergency Management's website and look for the Know Your Zone. In other words, it has a map of the entire state of Florida that identifies the different evacuation zones, some that are closer to the coast that are more likely to be evacuated, but in the bigger storms, they go further and further inland with those mandatory evacuation zones. Is storm surge a concern? What about flooding from heavy rainfall? FEMA flood zone maps and the requirement of having a flood insurance at your homes may dictate whether you need, whether you're threatened by flooding rainfall. But if enough rain falls in your community, there could be flooding, not at your home, but maybe on the roads in and out of your community. Consider what would happen if me and my family were kind of stranded on a proverbial island for a couple days. Would I have enough resources to be able to get by for a couple days if the one entry in and out of my community was threatened?
Sure.
Is my home built to the latest wind code standards? So how much wind is a concern to me? And a conversation that we had a little bit earlier is what, you know, things do we want to secure? In other words, you don't want outdoor lawn furniture but to become projectiles. So getting that stuff inside, anything that could become potentially a projectile, is part of the equation too. So if a storm threatens, reducing your overall threat from strong winds is important as well. And then tornadoes. Just factor tornadoes into your preparation plans. In other words, be able to act fast, because if a tornado warning is issued, you may not have a lot of time to get to your shelter. So factor all four storm hazards in when it comes to those preparations. And you can do that ahead of the season, right? You shouldn't be doing that now. We're entering the peak of hurricane right. season.
So have an evacuation plan. Hurricane kits are always recommended with enough food, water, supplies for, what, 3, 5, 7 days?
Yeah, I hear multiple opinions on that. Really, the general guidance is anywhere from 3 to 5 days. Disaster supplies like food and water, batteries, charging cables, you know, a portable radio, things like that.
Radio is very important.
It is.
Those
Here
of us
are.
In radio know that.
Yep.
Also, think about your kids and your pets. What are you going to do to occupy them while you're either evacuated from home or you're stuck inside your home while this event's going on? You got to keep them occupied. Your medicines, having cash, because ATMs aren't going to work for when stores do open and you go to resupply what's in your home. A lot of things to consider.
It is. And work with your local county emergency management who have developed these type of plans to identify the risks within your local community. They know your community best. You know your community best. Work with them to determine which hazards are the most impactful or potentially the most impactful, and think about what you can do to keep your family safe.
Will Ulrich, always a wealth of information. Thank you for sharing it with us today on the Florida Roundtable. I look forward to seeing you again, hopefully not during a storm or a badly impacted storm season. And we'll see you next weekend on the Florida Roundtable.
You've been listening to the Florida Roundtable with Bill Meek on News and Public Affairs presentation of the Florida News Network. The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of this station management, owners, or sponsors. For questions or concerns, contact Florida Roundtable at fnnonline.net.